following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to the How to Kill an Hour Hour, the half-hour edition brought to you by Southside Medical Center, where your health is their primary care. And now, without further ado, here's your host for the next 30 minutes, the one, the only, the Ed Man.
Oh yeah, welcome once again to the How to Kill an Hour radio show. I'm your host, the man with a plan, the Ed Man, here to give you some of the news for the past week. And actually, I guess the main thing I'm going to be talking about today is the Democratic debates. And I also want to talk about the fallout, the aftermath of these debates and what has happened as a result. And it's really funny to see, you know, when Trump was running, the Democrats said that Trump will destroy the Republican Party. I mean, that's what they said multiple times. And the reason is because, well, I think everybody knew that the Republicans, the establishment Republicans, didn't really want Donald Trump to get elected. And they couldn't really pull the same shenanigans that they did on Ron Paul back when he ran. And a big reason for that is because there was a media blackout on Ron Paul. You know, nobody was covering him. They purposefully would not have him interviewed and wouldn't report news on him. I remember Fox News, I think it was Brett Baer, said, give us some more of that Mitt Romney stuff or something like that. You can keep the Ron Paul stuff. And I'm like, what is happening? But with Donald Trump, you can't ignore him like that because he is such a huge name and he draws so much ratings for whoever covers him. So they weren't really able to play those same games. Also, even though everyone was sure that there was no way that we could elect Donald Trump, the people really wanted to, as Michael Moore said, throw a Molotov cocktail into the political system. And they wanted Trump to win so badly that he took the primaries, beat, 16, 17 other Republicans, won the election in probably what's going to be, unfortunately, the greatest election in our lifetime. I mean, Obama's was huge because we showed that America is ready to elect a black president. But, you know, many people were backing Obama. Many movie stars were backing Obama. Many Democrats were backing Obama. Obama seemed like he was on an inexorable path to victory. On the other hand, Donald Trump was so opposed by Republicans, by Democrats, by the media, every single movie star. I mean, my goodness, they had the Avengers come on and do a video saying that you can't elect this guy, how he's racist, he destroyed the country, all of this stuff. And so Trump's winning was a shocker, whereas Obama's winning was just kind of validation, right? And so when Donald Trump won, I mean, the world really changed. And the media really showed itself for what it is. And what we kind of knew, but only the ones who really, you know, looked beyond the veil, right? I mean, it was always subtly there, sometimes more than subtly, that the media was in the tank for, you know, Democrats and Obama especially, that they're mostly liberal. But when you look at what they're doing now, it's not even comparable. I mean, they are straight making defamatory remarks about him, and they don't even care. I mean, they're just calling him racist now, saying any statement he makes is racist. I saw a snippet of one of his speeches, and he's talking about 9/11 and the first responders. He said he signed the first responders bill. And he said that he was on the ground during 9/11. He saw the carnage there. He says he doesn't consider himself a first responder, but he was on the ground. And the press takes a clip of this, puts it on Twitter with a comment of that he claims to be a first responder, when his exact words in the clip that they show is that he does not claim to be a first responder. And this is what makes the news cycle. And they're saying that Trump says that he was a first responder. They try to make it seem like Trump is saying that he is down there with a, you know, with a helmet and a flashlight and pulling people out of the rubble. And he actually did have people on the ground who were helping to do that and were searching for people. It's true, but he himself did not say that he was doing that. But from what the press is writing, you would think that he had. And this is part of the reason why people have such a bad impression of this guy. Now, look, Trump is, I mean, he's kind of a huckster, guys, all right? He's a showman, all right? He's a salesman. I don't think there's much doubt about that. And, you know, I had trouble taking this man seriously. And I hate, or I used to hate, defending this guy. But you would have to, because the things that would be said about him and that are said about him are so unfair and so ridiculous that there's no choice. If you want to be sane, you have to separate the fact from the fiction. And the things that are being said about Trump are false and provably so. And I once asked my grandfather, I don't remember why, but I once asked him the definition of crazy. And he thought about it for a second, and he said the inability to tell fantasy from reality. And using that definition, I could say that Democrats are crazy. The press is crazy. It baffles me that they can look at something and print something other than what is visibly there for the entire world to see. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with the term woke. And it's funny to say it because back in 2008, woke was something like the kids would say. And I would hear it most often in reference to the Ron Paul campaign, because what it meant was you realized why the world works the way that it does. For instance, why do we have inflation rather than deflation, right? What is the Fed? What is its role in us being all poor relatively? And so that's what woke meant. Woke meant that you understood that everything, that the left and right paradigm was a game, and you just had a greater understanding than the normies, than the average person, of how the world works. Well, now the term woke has been co-opted, and now it means that you understand the way the world works, but in kind of like a way that it doesn't actually work. So for instance, you understand the patriarchy, right? That men, white men specifically, just control everything, and that you can't do anything because of the control of white, what do they call it, cis, normally sexually oriented males. So they're white, they're older, and they're heterosexual. And that is the worst possible combination of things. So the woke media means that you have movies and other media that promote this idea. And there's been a term lately, get woke, go broke. So in other words, if you are a nicely, you know, if you're a media outlet that's doing well, for instance, CNN dominated at one point, just dominated the media, and then you get woke, suddenly your ratings fall, people lose interest, and you go broke. And one of the explanations for this paradigm is that, and why people keep doing it, why do media companies keep doing this, is the idea that you get a lot of traffic, and so it provides a short-term boost in your ratings and traffic and maybe even income, because, you know, advertisers pay depending on what your traffic looks like. But the people who come to visit and and are leaving comments on your message, maybe don't even like the message. They're just stopping by to witness what's happening, and they don't become fans of yours. They take off, and then you're left with nothing. So a movie maybe gets a lot of press and a lot of hype because the movie is woke. Hey, look, we got this great, you know, new superhero, and she's a woman, and she's got, you know, short hair, and she is in every way perfect. And then you watch the movie, and it's not very satisfying because it's centered around this individual who hates men and, I don't know, just whatever the woke people do. And then people, maybe that movie does well in the first week, and then it doesn't do so good. Or maybe the first iteration of that movie does well, and then the sequel does terrible. You know, and there's always excuses for it. A lot of these movies that come out that push this agenda, they'll say things like, well, we didn't do well because of all the misogynists, right? The misogynists didn't want to come out and watch our movie. It's funny how the misogynists will watch, you know, many other movies starring women, like Ghost in the Machine, or they'll watch the Aliens franchise. But for some reason, they don't want to watch, you know, these newly pushed on us things. So what they're doing is they figure that they can take established characters and push the message using that. So, for instance, 007 now is going to be a woman. Right, so 007 was James Bond, the dude, and now it's going to be a woman. And they have a in-universe explanation for this, so they're trying not to, you know, make fans angry. But at the same time, they are replacing a white man who's an icon with a black woman. And now they've announced Thor is going to be a woman. Natalie Portman, a.k.a. Princess Amidala to us nerds out there, is going to be the new Thor. And there was now, I don't think they filmed even one frame of this yet. I could be wrong. But the reason I say that is because I saw Natalie Portman holding up Thor's hammer. And she was holding it in the most awkward way possible. Again, you know, I understand that she might look great in the movie. She might look like she was born to play Thor. But in that one press shoot, she did not look like that, right? And if somebody said, hey, we're going to make Thor into a woman, and I have a choice, just say that I'm running this thing, and they're like, so who do you want to cast as the new Thor? And I'm thinking, well, let's see, Thor, tall, godlike, superpowered, as strong as a Hulk, Natalie Portman. No, I would not choose Natalie Portman as the successor to Thor. Hey, you know who would make a good Thor? It's Tulsi Gabbard, huh? Tulsi Gabbard would make a pretty good Thor, or Wonder Woman or somebody. And we'll get to her in just a second. I do have one more thing to talk about with this, the crazy news cycle we've been getting, which is CNN. I'm looking at an article here. I mean, I don't even know if I should say this, because even reading the article, even though I didn't write it, I'm still embarrassed just reading the article. So I'm on CNN's Twitter, and this is real. This is real. This was written August 1st, 2019, 6:15 a.m., CNN. Have you ever noticed the popularity of white robots? The reason for these shades of technological white might be racism, according to new research. And then it's got a picture of a white robot with some gold trim, an American flag on it, doing some task. And it says underneath the picture, robot racism? Yes, says a study, showing humans' biases extend to robots. There is a reason most human-shaped robots are white, says researchers, and the reason is not productive at all. Ooh. Well, racism is rarely productive unless
just leave it at that.
You're a Democrat. My girlfriend does not want me to make this joke because it is furthering the party divide. And you know what? She's right. There's nothing to be gained from accusing the other side of racism. It's true. All right. Well, then let's do this then. Can we all agree that an article from CNN about robot racism is stupid? And let's admit the truth that if CNN, that if robots were made out of, just metal and they were left dark colored, that CNN would then say it's some kind of subconscious bias or would find some study to publish, to report on, saying that with some subconscious bias, some throwback to slavery and the collective unconscious of human beings. In other words, CNN is simply trying to pit people against each other and to make mountains out of molehills. I mean, to think that the reason why robots are white is because of racism, can we all agree that's just stupid? I'll read the opening of the article here. It says, you see them in films like Will Smith's I, Robot. Weren't those robots evil or no? And Eve from WALL-E. Real life examples include Honda's Asimov, Ubtech's Walker, Boston Dynamics' Atlas, and even NASA's Valkyrie robot, all made of shiny white material. You know, I would like to point out Robot, the most famous robot of them all, Robbie the Robot, who starred in everything from The Twilight Zone to Lost in Space, and he was a black robot. So, I mean, what a true pioneer. I mean, really, I think this article is dismissing the greatest robot of them all, and the greatest robot of them all was black. So, I mean, what do you say to that? Who wrote this stupid thing? This was written by Caroline Klein and David Allen. CNN. What do you say to that, Dave and Carolyn? What do you say to that? Robbie the Robot doesn't even get a mention in this biased article from CNN. Once again, race baiting has extended to robots even. Not a mention of Robbie the Robot, beloved robot throughout the world. Star of film, star of screen and cinema. Anywhere, anyone who was alive during that time, indelibly etched in their mind is Robbie the Robot, and doesn't even earn one line of praise in this article. Really, CNN, you have outdone yourself. You're the worst ever. You know, Robbie the Robot was even in a Charmin commercial back in the 80s. Lost in Space was a great show. Hey, girlfriend, did you ever see Lost in Space? We'll have to binge watch that sometimes. Great show. I hear that they remade it. It was a movie, which I had never seen. And now, I don't know if it's still running, but it was on Netflix, I heard. And I haven't seen that either. But I'll bet it's woke. Hey, I can finally get to the debate. Huh? And there's really, I mean, what is there to talk about the debate? It was like the last one, but less Spanish. Everybody went after Biden. Biden did a lot better this time around, though. He was prepared. He had his hands up the whole debate. You know, he was protecting the chin there. And they came after him. They got some good lines on him, but he got one or two good lines also. But the main part that I want to talk about is Tulsi Gabbard just completely owning Kamala Harris. She owned her. Okay, so Tulsi Gabbard is like one of these candidates that they're trying not to cover, right? But the ownage was so hard and so blatant and so incredible that they were forced to cover her. Tulsi is actually suing Google because during the last debate, her name was trending, and then they took out her. They disabled her ability to take out advertisements. Isn't that weird? So she's suing him for a couple million dollars right now. Anyway, she ended up trending again. And another hashtag was trending called Kamala Harris Destroyed. It was glorious. So you got Tulsi out there. You know, she's looking all fine and stuff. And Kamala Harris has got her back turned to her. And she's talking to Joe Biden and trying to trash talk him and stuff. And then CNN. So CNN was trying to get the candidates to argue with each other. And they say to Tulsi, so Tulsi, what do you think of Joe Biden's you know, essentially racist comments. And instead of answering the question, Tulsi said, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about Kamala Harris's record. And boom, she punches Kamala Harris verbally right in the face. And Kamala Harris has no answer. She's all punch drunk and stuff. So I'll play the clip for you here.
I want to bring in Congresswoman Gabbard. Congresswoman Gabbard, you took issue with Senator Harris confronting Vice President Biden at the last debate. You called it a, quote, false accusation that Joe Biden is a racist. What's your response?
I want to bring the conversation back to the broken criminal justice system that is disproportionately negatively impacting black and brown people all across this country today. Now, Senator Harris says she's proud of her record as a prosecutor and that she'll be a prosecutor president, but I'm deeply concerned about this record. There are too many examples to cite, but she put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana. She blocked evidence. She blocked evidence that would have freed an innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so. She kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. And she fought to keep cash bail system in place that impacts poor people in the worst kind of way.
Thank you, Congresswoman. Senator Harris, your response.
As the elected Attorney General of California, I did the work of significantly reforming the criminal justice system of a state of 40 million people, which became a national model for the work that needs to be done. And I am proud of that work. And I am proud of making a decision to not just give fancy speeches or be in a legislative body and give speeches on the floor, but actually doing the work of being in the position to use the power that I had to reform a system that is badly in need of reform. That is why we created initiatives that were about reentering former offenders and getting them counseling. It is why, and because I know that criminal justice system is so broken, that I am an advocate for what we need to do to not only decriminalize, but legalize marijuana in the United States.
I want to bring Congresswoman Gabbard back in. Your response?
The bottom line is, Senator Harris, when you were in a position to make a difference and an impact in these people's lives, you did not. And worse yet, in the case of those who were on death row, innocent people, you actually blocked evidence from being revealed that would have freed them until you were forced to do so. There is no excuse for that. And the people who suffered under your reign as prosecutor, you owe them an apology.
Senator Harris.
My entire career, I have been personally opposed to the death penalty, and that has never changed. And I dare anybody who is in a position to make that decision to face the people I have faced to say, I will not seek the death penalty. That is my background. That is my work. I am proud of it. I think you can judge people by when they are under fire, and it's not about some fancy opinion on a stage, but when they're in the position to actually make a decision, what do they do? When I was in the position of having to decide whether or not to seek a death penalty on cases I prosecuted, I made a very difficult decision that was not popular to not seek the death penalty. History shows that, and I am proud of those decisions.
Senator Harris, thank you very much. Senator Bennett, a question for you.
And then they left that conversation, and I'm running out of time, unfortunately. But Kamala Harris then went on with a question by Anderson Cooper later on. And again, she failed to defend the accusations that Tulsi Gabbard made against her. And instead, she just said that Tulsi Gabbard was an Assad apologist, although she said it very awkwardly. And then she said that she's a top-tier candidate and Tulsi is polling at 0 or 1%, and she can't take her words seriously. I mean, so really terrible, terrible optics, the way that it looks on Kamala Harris. And the response to that from both Kamala Harris's camp and supporters and a lot of people in the media in general is saying that Tulsi Gabbard is a Putin puppet and a Russian asset, and that her hashtag Kamala Harris destroyed was trending on Moscow time, whatever that means. So people dug into it and they found out that was a complete falsehood, and that the Twitter hashtag started trending a little bit after the debate. So the Moscow thing was just a BS excuse. But the idea that they have to go back to the Russians did it shows what a terrible position a lot of these establishment Democrats are in to have to defend it that way. All right, guys. Well, I'm out of time.